Hello, and welcome to The Oscar Went To, the podcast that looks back at a year in film and sees what films endured, what films didn't, and attempts to figure out why. Please give it up for your masters of ceremony, Max Salim and Nick Mastad.
Okay. Yes. I forgot to tell you last time we talked, did you notice anything different about me?
What struck me is that, I mean, you're looking very svelte. You're looking very, very, but you're always looking svelte. So no, I don't, something new?
I lost my fucking AirPods on the production.
Oh, bro.
Bummer.
No. Okay. And this has to happen all the time because it's happened to me twice, knock on wood, where I've like taken off my KN95 and just the AirPod went flying and like, in my case, it went into like the curb, but I was like, can so easily just forever be lost. And I'm like, this has to happen all the time.
It must. And I even like, I got the idea in my head, like on day three of the production, like I'm going to fucking lose these things. I have a feeling because there was just too much stuff. And I was anyways, that sucked.
Too much stuff like on your head or just like just
I mean just turning. Too much stuff in my yep. head and too many locations I was in. Going and leaving shit all over the place and and I don't want to make this an advertisement for AirPods, but the shitty thing about them is that they're very expensive. Mm-hmm. They're very easy to lose.
Mm-hmm.
But I totally am gonna buy another pair.
Yep.
They become a necessity.
Yeah, no, I absolutely. I mean, the noise cancellation quality of them, they're really a good product. If it's any testament to how my honesty here is, I don't want to say that, but I am because they
I
are.
Know I made fun of them for years. So if you want a pair of AirPods, make sure to use coupon code The Oscar Went To on Apple's website.
Absolutely, and
our first sponsor was Apple.
Apple. I was actually just listening to the news story about them today about kind of the snafu they're in with China, which I recommend anyone curious or not should seek out that story.
Oh shit. We should start doing like a daily news podcast, dude.
Yes, we could call it the today. Yes, the today news. Finally, a news podcast, period.
Have you been watching movies?
I have, not as much, but I have. And actually the past couple days, I went to Film Forum yesterday for the first time and saw, I went and saw the Lady Killers from 1955. It's like this British comedy and it was a real pleasure. And it was like just, it was really nice. But I haven't been watching as much movies. No, I've watched the movies that we've been doing deep dives on. But because I think stuff has like been reopening and stuff, it just naturally has led to like less of me sitting in my bed with my laptop open watching something.
Good. I'm glad.
Which is understandable. Yeah. I imagine, well, since production has ceased, have you been watching movies?
Not really, but I feel like that's always a June thing, you know?
Yeah.
Like you can get back outside. There's stuff going on. The daylight stays in the sky late in the night. And somehow my movie watching usually dips a little bit here.
Yep.
So, but with production, I watch zero movies, which I would venture to say is the first time in my life I went 6 weeks without watching a movie.
Wow. 6 weeks without a movie. That is really something.
Yeah.
I mean, I've heard that that's the irony of film production is that, it just doesn't really allow you to watch any movies.
I guess maybe I watch like a minute of a movie every day as we slowly start
shooting
the movie. So maybe
you were a movie. Yeah. You were a movie for three.
I was a fucking movie, bro.
Did I watch anything? Yeah. Let's just say I did the ultimate deep dive.
So many movies, you're going to turn into one. Yeah. That's what happened.
I wish I would. That person becomes a movie producer because a witch cursed them. It's good. That's a movie. Well,
that's
freaking
an idea for a movie. Let's
writing that down. Writing that now down now.
Make sure to cut that from the episode. So no.
Yeah, I will. And if anyone is hearing this, it means I didn't do my job.
I will edit these. I'm deep in debt to you of editing.
No. I don't want you to feel like you're deep in debt to me because it's like because editing the show. I don't want it to be a you know, like this like big burden, because I think it gets overblown sometimes when it's like.
I think we're getting better at it too. When we were just definitely laying down like 2 hours of ums and ahs and dead ends, the editing process was much more difficult.
I will say I will call myself out. I still need to get better with ums and ahs. I'm still as I've been listening to my voice over again, it's been difficult, it's been tricky, it's been frustrating. So I'm still learning, and I'm allotting myself grace, but also being firm.
We're doing our best.
We're doing our best out here.
And making a podcast and then editing it really exposes some of your vocal crutches.
Absolutely. It lays them out naked for you to see, and it's a hard thing to reckon with. Also, I did think as I was editing, it would be fun just to release an episode that's just the stuff we cut out from other episodes specifically, because it is a mind altering cacophony of like and it's like it's just like a lot of it's wild, and I think I might throw something together.
Yeah, you should, because there's also just dead ends too, or me calling 14-year-old Emma Watson hot, which I noticed you cut out of that episode. But dude, I was 14 when I thought that, so it's fine.
Yeah, because I think we are relatively the same age as Emma Watson, or she might be a little young. Yeah, but no, yeah, totally. That is, I mean, that's we can cut this part out of this episode. But
all right, let's get into it, because I have stuff to say, more than I imagined. And
I love it.
And this is another sort of unconventional episode for us. And I promise that we will get back to our years in film, which is the foundation of our podcast.
Bread and butter.
But this is a little bit of a special episode. Hello and welcome to the Oscar Went To. I'm Max.
I'm Nick.
And we're back together talking about movies. Love it.
Yes.
I have some life news which inspired this episode.
Mm-hmm.
But in maybe even when this episode comes out, I will be a father.
Woo-hoo-hoo.
That's your reaction? This is the first time I'm telling you this, and that's your reaction?
Sorry. Congratulations.
I want to create the illusion that we only exist to each other on the podcast.
Okay, yeah. Take two. Feed me the line. Feed me the line one more time.
On July 11th, I will be a father.
Oh my God, dude. Why didn't you tell me?
Yeah, crazy. But as I've been saying, it's good that this process takes 9 months, because it sort of gives you some time to wrap your head around the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And at this point, I'm not going to say I'm ready, but let's fucking do it. You know? Let's take the test.
Yeah.
No more studying.
Yeah. My God. You described it as someone having an air horn. Do you still?
So the analogy when I told you that about the air horn was like, now I'm a month out from the due date. I was a month early. So as far as I'm concerned, this could go down at any point. And I don't really like this part of the process. The surprise of her going into labor, you know?
Yeah.
And I made it the example that it's like someone's going to come up behind me and blow an air horn in my ear at some point in the next month. And it could happen at any point, when I'm awake, when I'm asleep, when I'm watching a movie, like at any point. There's no preparing for it. And every day that passes, it gets more likely that that will be the day that the air horn goes off.
Yeah.
So I find this to be a little bit stressful.
Yeah. I mean, that analogy has stuck with me since you've said it. I mean, it just, cause just like the waiting is, I can't imagine. It's just like such a, like, what do you do with that tension? What do you do with that pressure? I don't know.
I'm not scared of her giving birth, but it's going to be certainly an intense experience.
Yeah, absolutely. And I imagine like one that's just like abstractly out there, you know, just like, yep, like people have babies and it's intense. But I imagine it being like it happening to you and your loved one. It's like, that's a different thing. That's a much different beast. That's
sure.
That's
yeah.
real.
What if it happened during this podcast? That would be crazy.
I mean, I with your blessing, we're we're doing it as is. I mean, we got to have that.
All right. Well,
I mean, life happens on the podcast.
If she goes into labor during this podcast, I'll keep recording like while doing everything. Okay. It'll be like crazy. It'll go viral.
Bring the microphone with you and we'll do it live.
So on this podcast, we usually talk about what films have aged well and why in a nutshell. But because of this life event that I have happening, I wanted to talk about kids' movies a little bit. Because one thing I've decided in this 9 months of mental preparation, one thing I'm really excited for is to watch movies with this kid. Mm-hmm. I feel like for me, a huge part of my parents raising me were the movies they plopped me down in front of and the movies we'd watch together and we'd go see, because they're very formative in my opinion. What do you agree with everything I'm saying?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I have a whole list of movies, and I have a niece and nephew who I've started to get the sensation from of the joy and pleasure that comes from particularly setting aside a particular movie and showing it to them is immensely satisfying.
I can't wait for this episode. I proposed us sort of doing a similar format to what we usually do, but instead of talking about movies that have aged well, talking about movies that we are excited to watch with our hypothetical children.
I love
it. And so we didn't talk super in depth about the criteria for this, but I was sort of thinking that they should be like kids/family movies, you know, not like baby movies, but maybe 11, 12 year old. You watch with like an 11 or a 12 year old and young,
sure,
and younger.
That holds true. I like originally broke mine down into like young, middle school and high school.
Okay.
But I think 11 and 12 like is that range where it's like,
cool.
It's kind of the catch all.
But yeah, I mean, I can't stress enough that I think that movies are like super formative. It's like your introduction to storytelling, because you can watch a movie before you can read a book, before you can like even wrap your head around, like maybe my grandpa like telling me some stories is the true intro to it. But like, and definitely you interact with like bigger concepts by watching kids' movies for the first time, you know, concepts that don't come up in your everyday life, but are fucking there.
Absolutely.
In the world.
You like every movie up until a certain, like until you're like 13, 14, I liked all movies that I saw, you know, like it wasn't like a thing where it's like, oh, that movie was bad. Like there's certainly ones that like connect with you much more strongly than others, but like it wasn't until I was 13, 14 where I'm like, what is this shit? Like this movie's bad. And so it's just like an introduction to culture. It's a treat. It's entertaining. It's like completely engaging. And yeah. And it's like, often I feel like it's immensely pleasurable to watch a movie that you loved as a kid, as an adult, and then and just watch it with new eyes and be like, oh man, this is like pretty sophisticated, or like, look at these themes that were present. Like, whereas when you're a kid, you're just like, it's all one thing that you're just like mainlining. And it's like to know that like the ingredients are all there of like quality storytelling and, maybe something that's potentially like a heavy concept thematically woven in. It's really cool. And I'm just imagining like myself sitting next to my future kid and like just kind of like side eyeing them, you know, as the movie's going on and just seeing what their face looks like at certain parts and stuff like that. Like, it's going to be so goddamn fun.
I wouldn't sit down and be like, hey, let's watch The Wind in the Willows tonight, you know, but now that I don't have a kid still, but I will enjoy doing that. It will kind of let me revisit childhood again with an adult perspective. Can't wait.
Of course.
Can't wait.
Of course. And it we've touched on this before, but it's worth clarifying. Your parents like were, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, particularly good. And it was like it seemed almost like a, what's the word I'm looking for? Like it was like a priority to show you like great movies. Like movies were like like them showing you movies was like a big thing. Like that was like a purposeful and plentiful thing. Correct?
Totally. I feel like maybe they would disagree, but I feel like we for sure watched pretty much through high school, like a movie every Friday or Saturday. And cool. We as a family, we'd watch a ton of movies, and I'm very grateful for that. And sort of jokingly, I mean, not jokingly, but it's become a joke. My dad would take me to movies that I had no business seeing as like a kid. But in hindsight, I like am glad he did that, even if they were sometimes intense.
My dad still to this day is game almost to see anything. Like he just like, you know, pick a movie and we'll go. But they, my parents were not the type that like, they were never like, you have to see this one. They were never like, you have to see Raiders of the Lost Ark or you have to see Star Wars. There was nothing that they pushed onto me of like, check this one out. It was always just like this, like kind of like openness of like, yeah.
Oh, I'm going to push movies onto my kids.
Oh, I am.
I'm going to be like, I'm going to Clockwork Orange the shit out of them.
And to be clear, that doesn't mean showing them Clockwork Orange, but it means prying their eyes open. And
yeah, it means prying their eyes open and dropping weird drops into them while they're forced to watch movies that I find to be relevant.
That's how that's their first experience watching Wind in the Willows. That's good. I like that. I feel like there is like the type of dad who's like the well-known like dad archetype is the musician dad who just like has all the records and is like a musician snob and is just like, no, you're listening to Wilco. No, you're listening to you know, this like under, you know, whatever. I'm going to embarrass myself because I can't reference like legit bands, but
could just do like it with movies.
But I feel like that with movies where it's just like, nope. Like in this house, we don't watch the Shrek films. We watch, you know, these movies, you know. But yeah, well, I'm very excited to do that.
Let's dive into it because I sort of anticipated, like, I don't know if we, like when I came up with the idea, I liked the idea, but then I was like just thinking of a couple. But as I started researching this, I mean, this is a deep well. You know, we could potentially do a whole podcast about kids movies.
Yes.
Because
yes.
Yeah, it is fruitful. So let's get into it. We're surely not going to touch on everything, but yeah, let's just start hacking our way through some of these kids movies and we'll take it from there.
Love it.
What is your process? You have like early, middle,
I have young. Childhood? Yes, I have young, middle school, and high school. I think like arguably your like 11 to 12 range is the catch-all for all of that. Maybe there would be some movies that would maybe be a little on the intense side, but by and large, I think that I'm thinking of like a 14-year-old. Like if I think like, you know, my kid's 14, it's like it's time to bust out. Like we can kind of get into some scary movie territory, which is going to be fun. But by and large, I will say mine are child friendly.
Okay. Let's start with your, so I just did kind of the classic thing, like a countdown from 5 to 1, but let's start with your young and see where it takes us. So give me some young ones.
So for young, I have Toy Story, which feels like blatantly obvious. I've shown that to my niece and nephew and it's immensely pleasurable. And also because there are, you know, there are like four of them now and there are countless like Toy Story shorts. And like TV specials and stuff like that. It is fun though to like have something like the original Toy Story is what I'm talking about here, but it is like for as much Toy Story content like that's out there, I all of it that I've encountered and I have seen, and I don't want to be obnoxious, but I have seen almost all of it is like high quality. That's also the beauty of like children's entertainment too, where it's like you can show them immediately and it's like it's stuff that like is part of you. And the fact that it's like appeals to kids, it's like, okay, I can like, it can be one of the first things I show my kids. So Toy Story is whoever, like you just know, it's just like it feels, there is like a pat on the back feeling of like, I'm like introducing, you know, the future generation to like quality storytelling and good, I'm exposing them to quality. And like, whether that's like true or not, I mean, it's whether that like has like a lasting effect or not, like you can't help but like pat yourself on the back and feel like good about that. Yeah, and then I also have, for young, I have Wallace and Gromit, The Wrong Trousers. Are you familiar with this
course,
movie?
Of course, dude. I was almost put Wallace and Gromit somewhere on my list because I really enjoyed them as a kid.
Yes.
I'm still... Wrong Trousers is the feature length, but they had three...
It's not. It's a short.
Feature length called?
Curse of the Were-Rabbit was the feature.
Right, okay. So it was one of the three shorts that kind of came out together. At least there was like a VHS together.
Yes. Yep.
And I loved Wallace and Gromit. I still like get choked up when the robot is on the moon, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
then finally gets to ski.
They're all charming as hell, so creative, such great little stories, great characters. Just check it out, because I feel like it's been a while since I've heard Wallace and Gromit referenced, and I'm needless to say, started showing it to my nephew and the DVD broke, which was just devastating. But he was like connecting with it, and it's just like they're great. I love Wallace and Gromit so much, and very excited to show my kids. Okay, so you have a countdown from 5 to 1. You're doing a Mount Rushmore plus one.
Yep, I'm doing Mount Rushmore plus one. Number 5, I'm going to throw mm-hmm. out there, and I'll also say that at the end of this, I think it might be therapeutic for us both to just say a bunch of names of movies.
Good.
Because
good.
Yeah, yes. I had like so many. I was like, God damn it, I'm not going to bring this up, and that's such a shame. But I'm going to throw out The Sandlot as my
nice.
Number 5.
Very nice. Yes.
You know, the kids' baseball movie is surprisingly well represented. Think about it. You know, there's like Bad News Bears, Rookie of the Year, Little yeah. Big League. And I think Sandlot is one of the better ones of those. And it's just so, mm-hmm. I don't have much to say about it, honestly. It's just like a lovely little movie that's like loosely surrounds around baseball, but is actually about these kids trying to get this piece of expensive memorabilia mm-hmm. away from a killer dog. And it just kind of like strikes a lot. I don't know, like a lot of these movies, I found myself really putting an emphasis on subtext, which I do. And as you know, and if people have been listening a lot, I really look for good, rich layers in mm-hmm. in my movies. This mm-hmm. one is not. It's more of like just a nostalgia thing, but it's just like such a fun movie for a kid to watch. And you just wish you would have little clubhouses and adventures
yes.
and make out with the lifeguard and all this mm-hmm. shit. So mm-hmm. I would be remiss to leave that off my list completely. But yeah, I'll admit that it's not as there's not as much meat on the bones in The Sandlot as some of these other ones we will talk about.
I'm glad you said this movie. This did not cross my mind. And we had the VHS and I saw it so many times and loved this movie. Tell me what you think about this. The Sandlot and Christmas Story are similar movies in regards to, like, it feels like it was like sort of an anomaly where it's just like, it's not from like a to my knowledge, the filmmakers didn't start a filmmaker's career and didn't end a filmmaker's career. It just feels like these kind of singular things that like the creators of didn't really do anything on that level again. But it's like you can't really replicate it. Like Sandlot, like, yeah, it's a story. Like it's vignettes of childhood that mainly have to do with baseball, but also other stuff. And it like, it's like on paper, it's like, it's just not, it's like, you just don't know that that's going to work. And in fact, it like just sounds like, okay, I don't know what this movie is, but okay. And it really is like a different level. Like it's so beloved. I've seen the movie a billion times, can quote it. Like it just has whatever that magic is and it has it in spades.
Take us to your middle aged.
Yeah.
Your what? 8 to 12 or something like that?
Yeah, I have it as middle school. So like kind of that, like I would say like 5th grade through 8th grade. I have The Iron Giant. Have you seen this?
The one from like it's 90, a bit more recent, right?
99. Yeah.
99. It's I have seen Iron Giant.
I love this movie. This came out when I was, I think, in 7th grade, and that's when I saw it. I rented it. And that is largely like what's informing this, because it feels like it is a movie. It's an animated movie that has like really like its cult status has like only grown in, over time. It's Brad Bird's first feature film, who obviously went on to do Incredibles and Ratatouille. And it's a really nice, like it's a hand-drawn feature film, and it's just deals with matters that are like a little heavier than children's movies, quote unquote, normally do. And it just feels like it's made for like a middle schooler, because I remember watching it in 7th grade in my basement with my dad. There's a point at the end of the movie where it's like, because it takes place in like Cold War era in like a fishing town in Maine, and sort of like an ET sort of story where like robot falls from the sky, befriends a lonely kid, and they have adventures together. But the last scene, the climax scene of it, where it's like a nuclear bomb is like launched and then like targeted at their town. There's a moment in the movie where they're all like standing in the town square and the nuclear bomb has been launched and it's like been launched up and it's going to come down. And there's a moment in the movie where they all like kind of like begin to accept the fate of like they're going to be annihilated. And before like, you know, the robot does his thing, but it's like, there's a, and I remember like that, like feeling that moment, like as a middle schooler watching it, it was like so intense and so like, I didn't have words for it, but I, it just like was really, really, it really affected me. And I just consuming every like behind the scenes thing I could get my hand on years since, Brad Bird said the idea behind the movie is what if a gun was a character? Like what if a gun like could talk and had feelings, like what would you like? And so that's what it is. Like the Iron Giant is a weapon. And like, here's a kid like telling him like, it's not bad to die, it's bad to kill. And just like these intense themes, kind of what we were talking about earlier, but they're just like woven into this story. And I just like imagine it ideally kind of like, you know, showing it to my kid when they're of age and just like sparking conversations about these things and like putting words to things that maybe they're feeling or don't feel, but like are going to encounter, and giving this them like this like really beautiful perspective on things that are like hard to talk about and therefore like not talked about maybe all that much. And like, it just like opens a conversation and also presents things in just like a really cool way. So
this is almost like a prerequisite to good kids movies. Yes. I feel like, not that they have to be scary or intense necessarily, but like, it is like an intro to bigger concepts that are real concepts that you are going to either come face to face with or interact with peripherally as you get older and older. And mm-hmm. it creates a foundation for you to start to have some perspective on this stuff. So I think you're on something with that. I don't remember that movie super well, but I like everything you're saying. I'll jump in to catch up a little bit.
Please do.
Do you have Inside Out on your list?
I don't, but...
Okay. So Inside Out is my lone Pixar movie on mm-hmm. my list. I think I've even said that it's my favorite Pixar movie. I think it's my mm-hmm. favorite like kids movie that isn't hand-drawn. And I watched it... I think also this is the only movie on my list that I saw like as an adult and not as a kid. So there's not a nostalgia factor that's playing into this, but I just think that the movie is really clever and funny. And I feel like it would have been a great movie for me to see in my like pre-puberty years.
Hmm. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And like to start to like get your head around the idea of like the idea of emotional balance mm-hmm. and hormones and mm-hmm. stuff like that. So again, What I'm looking for in these, like a nice story on the surface, mm-hmm. but then lots and lots to dig into underneath.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think like, it's like interesting to think about that movie too, where it's just like, how things have changed since we were a kid and like knowing just like, I guess the idea of just like watching Inside Out and having the vocabulary. Cause I mean, like we definitely like knew about emotions. Like it wasn't like, but like not to the extent of like how they're talked about now with like early development and early childhood. And it's like, I just feel like having the vocabulary to be like,
and I, for some reason, okay, I don't, I've always been a little puzzled with you being such a huge Pixar guy. But I feel like this doesn't mm-hmm. even like crack your top 10 of Pixar.
That's fair. It definitely cracks my, I mean, like, I think it's a combination of a couple things. One of them is nostalgia, like just like growing up, because Inside Out came out in 2015. So just like, just that a factor that we didn't grow up with it, I think has something to do with it. I love Inside Out, but like for my money, like, no, it's just what it is like, my particular favorite, like Pixar is, there is a neatness to Inside Out, like it's not formulaic, but it does almost hint at it's just like, what if cars talked? What if fish talked? What if monsters talked? What if emotions talked? Like it fits that category, which again, it's a brilliant one of a kind film. And like the creativity of it is operating on all cylinders. But like when you have like something like Up is my favorite Pixar, where it's just like, what the fuck is this movie? And it like works and it's harder to describe. And I love it. And like Ratatouille, very similar, where it's like, yeah, it's talking rats, but it's like the story itself on paper isn't like a, as tidy of a pitch as like something like Inside Out. So I guess that kind of speaks to it.
Makes sense. Take us to your other middle school movie.
Okay, Jurassic Park. Okay. Do you have this movie?
Nope, I don't.
Okay.
You know, I kind of have a vendetta for Spielberg. As
right,
you know, like
which
me.
We've never actually got into. We've never like really dug into on or off the podcast.
All like, right,
Qualms.
Let's save this for a non-kids themed episode. But this is my favorite Spielberg movie, I think. I love Jurassic Park.
No, I mean, this is a conversation because this, like, just in terms of like movies we're excited to show our kids, this fits the category of like, this isn't necessarily a kid's movie, but this is like, I cannot wait to like watch my kid watch this movie for the first time on like the biggest screen possible, like ideally at a theater. Cause it is like, it feels like religious sort of like, it's just like, I've heard people describe this movie as like, if we were to like Golden Record style, send like a film canister into space to like show alien life what like cinema is, like this is a good candidate for that movie because it's just like movie magic at its best. It's entertaining, it's scary, it's funny, it's spectacle, it's
thought-provoking.
Incredible thought-provoking, it's just absolute everything. And like, it's like maybe the best like piece of popcorn movie making ever made. And yeah, I remember seeing this when I was like, it was like the tail end of its theatrical run, so I was definitely younger than middle school, and I remember being like so scared by it, but also like it was incredible. And yeah, for those reasons, I'm just like stoked to show my kid.
For my money, it's some of the best like pure horror, like not Chainsaw Massacre, not like pop out of corners, like cheap horror, but just like, I don't want to compare it to The Shining, but more in that genre, like thought-provoking, just classic cinema horror. And I don't think people usually think about it as a horror movie, but there is like that middle section where it like, it starts to play with all of those elements of horror / suspense in a really nice way. And then something that, you know, we've talked to about a lot, and I'll fucking continue talking about this until we're done with this podcast, because I think it's an important thing, especially as we look back on movies, is that like the special effects totally hold up in that movie.
Yes.
They're awesome.
Incredible. Yes.
They're great. They're better than the current Jurassic Parks.
Yes.
And it's because they're rooted in physical space. They're rooted in camera tricks and reality. And it stands up like beautifully. I took my sister to see this, some re-release, and I was shocked. That was the last time I saw it, but I was shocked how good it all looked.
100%. And like incredible that like there's like significant amount of computer graphics from 1993 in it. But you're totally right. It's like sparing, and yeah, it holds up tremendously. I think I saw it at Music Box like a decade ago at this point. It was like a midnight screening, but I remember being like truly bowled over by, and like it felt religious. It really did. Like seeing it with an audience on a big screen, and it was just a fucking blast. Like it was awesome. Classic.
Yeah. And one of the best short films ever is the Dino DNA video that they all watch.
My God.
It's so good. I thought about that so much as a kid.
Bingo. Dino DNA. I mean, and talk about, and that's just like all exposition and like what a magic trick. Fantastic. All right. So you're on number three.
So I got number three, and that is The Princess Bride.
Ooh.
How do you feel about this movie? Do you have it on your list? Or?
I didn't encounter this movie until I was a little older. Like I love this movie, but I love that you're saying this. I continue.
Let me just start by throwing this out there, which is unrelated to childhood viewing of this movie. But between 1984 and 1987, in a 3-year span,
we're doing Rob Reiner.
Rob Reiner made the following films.
I love this. Yep.
This is Spinal Tap, Stand By Me, and The Princess Bride. Which,
incredible.
If you really think about that, it's pretty wild, because you don't think of Rob Reiner as one of the great directors at all. He wouldn't even come up in like probably the top 20. But those are three bona fide, iconic films from the 80s. I mean,
not 100%. And I'm looking this up now just to, and if we're staying in the 80s, the next movie he makes is When Harry Met Sally in 89.
And then he makes A Few Good Men. Like, I mean, he had a great run.
Just the 80s conversation, like he is one of the best directors of the 1980s. Like those are four bona fide classics. It's incredible. And it is like such an oversight. And they're all pretty different movies. Like, we're, you know, like coming of age, straight up, like, he like directed the first mockumentary, and this, like a children's like comedy, and then a rom-com. Like, that's incredible. Incredible.
Yeah. Well, and then A Few Good Men, and I don't want to, it's not one of the greatest movies ever made, but it's like a total departure from anything we just talked about.
Yeah.
And is like sort of a serious talkie in a lot of ways.
I've never seen A Few Good Men.
That's okay. You've had much more egregious blind spots than A Few Good Men, but it is way different, is my point, than these, yeah, but also sure. really good. But yeah, I mean, I like this movie a lot. I remember as a kid, like, just yucking it up at it. I rewatched it recently. It wasn't as funny as I remember, but it's like, and it's a little formulaic, but it's just like a great spin it puts on all these tropes from, you know, basically the history of storytelling, you know, or the history of fairy tales, let's say. And I just get the sense that it's like a great movie. I like the meta quality of it. And it just seems like a great movie for like a younger kid to watch that plays with these stories that we all know and somehow grow up with. But then like just, yeah, sort of makes fun of it, sort of puts a spin on it, but sort of embraces it too. It's really it's really like a nice movie. I don't really know anyone that doesn't like the movie.
Yes, I would agree with you. And like, I've met numerous people who are like ride or dies with this movie, that like it is beloved to them.
Give me your first high school movie.
Okay, so my first high school movie is The Sixth Sense. So I didn't like scary movies in high school. I didn't like scary movies. I didn't really start watching or enjoying scary movies until like probably deep college. And so like part of me like has like, if I'm, you know, if it's like, I am a little hesitant because I don't want to scare the shit and like damage my kid if they're anything like me in high school by showing them this. But like in the past like 2 years, I rewatched this movie and was like openly bawling through multiple scenes of it. And B was just like, It is a scary movie. It's a horrifying movie. But like in between the scares and in between the horror of it is such a good, tender, gentle, beautiful movie about like about trauma and death and like and living. Now I'm sounding obnoxious, but it really just like struck me of how like it's just so much more than a horror movie. And like M. Night Shyamalan, like say what you want, but like there's a reason he's still allowed to make movies. And it's like this movie is an all-time classic, and it's bulletproof. There are so many great things about this movie. Again, this is like Titanic level, where it's like it becomes such a part of culture that it gets like parodied until it's just dust. But when you return to the actual thing itself, you're like, oh, that's right, there's a reason this was like everywhere for like 10 years, because it's fucking brilliant.
And from the blockbuster just masterpiece packed year 1999, I can't wait to do that year. I'll definitely rewatch it then. My list would be different, I think, if I got into this type of category, because this is where I'll really start to Clockwork Orange my kid.
Yeah.
We're watching The Conformist. We're watching Full Metal Jacket. We're, you know, like really crank up the intensity of the movies. But
what you got for two?
All right. So I'm surprised we've made it this far and we haven't talked about Disney movies in general.
Yeah, that's impressive. Yeah.
I'm going to give a Disney movie here.
Okay.
But what is your relationship with Disney movies? Did you watch all of them as a kid?
A lot of them. A lot of them. Yeah. We weren't like religious about like owning like the Disney movies or like seeing them. But I mean, I certainly saw, you know, Beauty and the Beast, Aladdin, Lion King in theaters, Little Mermaid in theaters. Like you had to actively avoid Disney movies to not see a lot of them, I feel like, in our generation. Like, yeah, love them. Yeah. How about you? Were you like seeing all of them?
I think, yeah, I was pretty much saw all the Disney movies. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's like, yeah, I think they're a pretty good thing to watch as a kid. I brought it up before. I always like how in every Disney movie, it gets a little bit too scary at a certain point, but that's fucking life, you know? Sometimes life's a little bit scary.
For sure.
And I think that they just, as like pieces of as stories and pieces of art to plop your 6-year-old, your 7-year-old down in front of, I think there's a lot of value in them. I'm not a big fan of being like hypercritical of something that came out in like 1940 with my 2021 eyes. Mm-hmm. With that said, I think there's probably, if I have a little girl, I don't know that I'd like have her watch Snow White, for example. But yeah, I think maybe the real early stuff, the princess stories are like a little bit in a cliche that I wouldn't want to expose my like preconscious daughter to.
Sure.
But, you know, like starting with Beauty and the Beast, like they start handling their princesses differently. And I would totally show Beauty and the Beast to my kids. And yeah, so I think I'll show a lot of Disney movies to my kids. And so I'll throw one out there. And that doesn't mean it's the best Disney movie, but I just felt like we needed a nostalgic Disney movie that came out in our childhood on this episode. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to put Lion King out there.
Nice. Yeah, perfect.
Yeah. I think, like we were talking, this does like a good job of, it's like a story. It loads it up with subtext and relevant subtext. And there's some heavy themes in this movie. I would say like jealousy, family issues, societal classes, death, afterlife. And I think it kind of handles those topics elegantly. And it's like a good, if I had to give an intro to death to my relatively young child, I think Lion King is like a pretty solid place to start.
I would agree 100%. 100%. I saw they really re-released the animated version like 3D, like again, 10 years ago at this point. And I think that's the last time I saw it. But then I was like, I was blown away in terms of like we were saying earlier, revisiting something from your childhood after being super familiar with it in childhood and then like waiting like a decade and revisiting it. That was like a real, like it a real pleasure. Cause it is like the afterlife stuff, particularly of like, he lives in you and like what that means and how that's presented is goddamn powerful and beautiful. And there's a reason this is like a top Disney classic. It's so good.
Totally, dude. Totally. So yeah, Lion King. Fuck. But I mean, this is like what you just said is what I'm so excited about is like,
yes,
to revisit these things. I haven't seen Lion King in probably at least a decade, maybe longer, but to revisit these things, you know, with the eyes of a quote unquote adult sitting next to someone much younger, I think will be a really profound and fun experience.
100%. I love that. I think like Iron Giant and Lion King are maybe for my money, the best like examples like that we've given. I'm just like in regards to like a kid's movie, because it's like this thing that we keep coming back to where it's like it has themes that are otherwise really hard to broach or like wrap your head around. And I feel like both those movies are like one of the best examples of that, of a movie doing that, where it's like, okay, like this is accessible to kids, but like what we're getting into is like concepts that are like otherwise like really hard to understand or even like articulate.
Yeah, like concepts that like I, as a 34-year-old, I'm not even close to like sifting through completely.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, kudos. This is, I think, kind of like the, again, not the best Disney movie, but sort of like the best accumulation of what Disney can offer, like kind of packed into a 90-minute film. So
yes, absolutely. I think if there's like a singular example of like Disney like operating on all cylinders, it's definitely this movie. I like that.
Number one, or not number one, your final high school level film.
Well, let's go to your number one and then we'll kind of like shout out movies because I think it'll work better that way.
Okay.
So what do you got? What do you got? That was Lion King. What do you got for number one?
Okay. So my number one is the one I'm most pushing the age limit on. Okay. But I think. I don't want to say that I'm a, you know, like a boy wonder at understanding movies, but I think I could wrap my head around this movie pretty comprehensively as like an 8-year-old. But that's Back to the Future.
Hell yes. God damn. Great choice. Can't believe
this was my jam.
Yeah.
This is still one of my favorite. I saw it so many times as a kid. This is still one of my favorite movies. And the more that I went, you know, went to film school, the more films I watched, the more I interact with movies, the more it's reconfirmed in my head that this is like fucking masterpiece.
Damn. You know,
there's no fat on this movie anywhere. Like every frame is loaded with meaning. You know, it's like it has a super high replay value, and there's just like there's nothing gratuitous in this movie at all. And so without exaggeration, I think it's one of the best movies ever made. Mm-hmm. And the reason it's number one on this list is not necessarily because of that, but I think it's like a perfect movie as a bridge from kids movies to adult movies.
Love it. Love it. Okay. Yes. Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's like, cause the story's complicated, but it's not like difficult to understand, but it's sort of like mind blowing to a kid. You know, you have these three different storylines that all connect, and it's like an intro to sci-fi. Definitely. Mm-hmm. It's like a very attainable sci-fi movie. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, it blew my little mind, you know, imagining, I mean, not only the concept of time travel, but like, what if my parents hadn't met these sorts of like ideas? So it's like slightly complex storytelling, but it's totally accessible. And I think when my kid is like, I fucking get Back to the Future and I get why the first shot has this, this, and this in it and can really dig deep into it, then it's gonna be like, all right, let's fucking go. Let's crack open, you know, like the real filmography here.
Unlock and
start to play around. So
that is
why it's my number one.
I love that, man. That's like so perfect. Yeah. And you're so right too. Cause it is like, it's accessible to all, but it is like, cause I'll be honest, I didn't really grow up with it. Like we had like I think we recorded it off of TV one time. So we had this like kind of bastardized version of it on a VHS tape. And so I never saw it like front to back. It was just like, which just like probably sounds like sacrilegious, but watching it in adulthood for kind of the first time, like front to back, it was just like, yes, I can see why it is just like, it's also the thing I always think of too, just centered out on this movie briefly, is that the original draft or one of the original drafts to this movie opened with the screen was black and it had a Carl Sagan quote. And then it said, and then the audio was the Howdy Doody show. And it says, what time is it, kids? And the Howdy Doody show was playing. And I've like always loved that little piece of it because it's like, it's taking like two very disparate things of like the most intelligent, thought-provoking science available and like a 1950s like kitschy sort of kid show and like throwing them together. And like, to me, it's like that quote and that audio clip are not in the movie, but that like aesthetic is there where it is like blending like real science fiction with like this like pop entertainment and like colorful, like sort of kids, at least kids accessible, like entertainment. And it's like, I just like, I love that. I love that. Like it's, at its heart, it's also two.
Yeah. Things. I mean, it's a really fascinating, if you dive deep into the making of Back to the Future, there's a lot there for you and I won't get into it in this episode, but if we ever do Back to the Future, there's a lot to talk about just in the mechanics of the production. But totally, I remember like looking at the VHS box and just looking at the title and being like being blown away by like putting the words Back to the Future next to each other on a video, you know?
Yes.
So
I also think there's something to be said too for movies that had like completely bold original like logos, like the Back to the Future title is a logo and it has like so much, like it has such like flair to it that maybe I'm wrong about this, but I feel like movies don't, it's like Ghostbusters is a similar thing where it's like, it's a, like a symbol and a title. And it just like, was that from the jump, which I feel like maybe we've lost a little bit, but there's like
good point. Yeah.
There's a real, like there's real power in that, real confidence. But yeah, fucking excellent choice, man. That's a movie that like, despite not having like the nostalgia that I think a lot of people in our generation have for that movie, I think it's like way high up there for me as well in regards to movies I'm excited to show my child.
Give me your final high school movie here, and we'll kind of get on the off ramp, as you say.
So after what you said in the previous thing of like this, I'm maybe operating in a different like age group here. Well, maybe fuck you over. But Jaws is another movie that I'm really excited to show like my high school kid. And I don't know how you feel about this. All I know is that you hold Jurassic Park in higher esteem than this movie based on what you said previously. But I saw this movie pretty young and it is very scary, but it's similar to Jurassic Park. It is the, it's just like perfect popcorn entertainment where it's scary. But I've seen this movie most recently, like 2 months ago, but I've seen it so many times, and on each watch it's just like strikes me each time of how elegant it is, how many details are there. I can't say anything that hasn't already been said about this movie, but I'm just like psyched to show my kid this movie and again like look over at them as they're watching it, knowing all the horrific moments, all the laughs, all the like phenomenal moments in this movie.
I like popcorn Spielberg. Jurassic Park's my favorite. My issues with Steven Spielberg do not stem from Jaws, E.T., Raiders of the Lost Ark, these sorts of things. So I can get down with Jaws. I'll get a kick out of showing Jaws to my kid, surely. So
yeah,
it's just we're a little bit late.
Yep.
But let's just rattle off some movies and then let's do a couple deep dives. All right.
Cool. Yeah, that sounds great to me.
All right, how about we do this? How about we do this? How about you say a title and then I say a title, okay?
Okay. And we're not going into them?
I mean, we can, but...
Okay. I got Dumb and Dumber.
All right. Mm-hmm. You can hear us talk about that length on a deep dive. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I have the new Spider-Man Enter the Spider-Verse.
Ooh, very nice. Very nice. That didn't cross my mind. That's really good. Nice to have a super recent one, too. Home Alone.
Also another deep dive of ours.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Coraline.
Very nice. Previously referenced Stand By Me.
Yes, dude. Yes. From one of my personal favorite, Richard Linklater, School of Rock.
Ooh, very nice. Obvious, but have to say it, original Star Wars. I'm very interested to see how that translates, because Star Wars is such a like brand and like machine now that like showing my kid the original Star Wars, I don't know like if that's gonna just like feel like I don't know how that's gonna translate, but it was such a meaningful
funny you say that
to me. Yeah,
I'll just briefly say on Star Wars and in general when I was going through this list that I was thinking like maybe first of all the Chosen One story is a little bit played out in my opinion at the moment. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's great to show to kids. That these Chosen One stories, they seem like Ooh. Less of a relevant message because your kid's probably going to be pretty normal, not the Chosen One.
That's interesting. And that also informs your choice about Into the Spider-Verse, because I feel like that, although technically a Chosen One story is the nice twist of like anyone can wear the mask. That's good.
I exactly. Like that. Exactly.
Okay. Okay.
Muppet Treasure Island.
Okay. Interesting. Interesting. Can I just like briefly why Treasure Island?
That's the one I played out the tape when I was a kid, and not Love the that. Original Muppet movie, but that's the one Love I really that. Liked for some reason.
Love that. I like that. That's sweet. I was going to put the Muppet movie on here, like the original one. I'll just say Muppets in general. Like I'm very excited to like I would love to show them the Muppet Show. I'd love to show them like some of the original Muppet stuff, like because that stuff is like truly, I mean, that's next level creativity.
Your turn.
I also have Dark Knight, which is like, I think definitely on the intense side and definitely like a high school watch. But in regards to just like, I think how like our parents were insistent that we watch like Raiders of the Lost Ark, I'm going to feel similar of like, okay, you have to understand at the time this came out, it blew everyone's mind. And I'm interested to see like how that translates to a kid, you know, who just like isn't aware of any of that. I like to think that it would hold up, but I'm not sure.
Anastasia.
Ooh. Oh, interesting. Okay. Okay.
Go.
I'll continue. I do have Kiki's Delivery Service, which is a Miyazaki movie. And although I've only recently been exposed to Miyazaki's work, I do I wish I had seen it earlier. And Kiki's Delivery Service, it feels like Spirited Away, of course, but like Kiki's Delivery Service is like one that like feels like particularly accessible to like, it just feels like very childlike and very like, it's a really beautiful world and environment. And yeah, but like, I think any like Studio Ghibli stuff, I think.
Yeah, I think Asian animation, there's like a, there's some good stuff there that, that I didn't have when I was a kid, but like, I'll definitely start to sift through a little bit.
For sure.
Cool Runnings.
Ooh, very nice. I haven't seen that movie in so long. I got Raiders of the Lost Ark for obvious all reasons.
Right. Bon Voyage, Charlie Brown.
Oh, did that one come out in theaters?
I don't know. I saw it on TV. I never saw it in theaters for sure.
Okay. I have a vague memory of seeing a Charlie Brown like Peanuts movie in theaters, and I think it might have been that. I have Monsters, Inc.
Okay. How many more do you have?
I'm fresh out.
Okay.
Yeah.
Karate Kid.
I've never seen the Karate Kid.
It's nowhere close to making my top five, but it's like Rocky for kids, basically.
Nice. Okay. Yeah, I like that.
So
never
it's like got the pump up movie. Yeah. All right. And then let me just rattle through my last couple. Nightmare Before Christmas, Pinocchio, Yellow Submarine, Lego Movie. And I think that's it.
I like that. Those are all good. Nightmare Before Christmas, I definitely was an oversight of mine. I like loved that movie as a kid.
Yeah.
I'm also, yeah, just like, yeah. It's interesting, like animation with kids where it's like they don't know what they're watching, or I feel like, or like how it's made, where it's like Nightmare Before Christmas just like looks awesome, you know? And it's like, you know, this is like stop motion. It just feels like a cool way to introduce that kind of stuff.
All right, we won't get too off course with our our format of our podcast, but I think this kids thing, there's something to it. So I propose doing a couple deep dives. We can decide if it'll be two or four, but when we release this, we'll put the kids movie on deck in the show notes. And if you feel like doing a little trip down memory lane with us, check that out and join us for next week's episode.
It's going to be fun. Little special world.
All right. Well, the boilerplates don't feel that relevant, but if you have any opinions about these movies we just rattled off, if you think we have a huge omission or something like that, send us an email. We love to hear from you. And if we think you're onto something, we'll read it on the next episode.
Love it. Love it. This is fun, Max. This is good.
It was fun. And, makes me feel innocent again.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, I feel like I've never veered too far from these movies, just kind of being like into animation and like children's sort of entertainment. But it's very fun to like explicitly think about like, okay, what movies are priority to show? It's fun. It's good.
It was great to chat movies with you, Nick, as usual. Man. But welcome especially great because back. We had a bit of a hiatus.
Yeah, welcome back. On behalf of me and all of our listeners, it's great to have you back.
Thank you. And we'll talk offline about our deep dive next week.
Sounds good. Until then, the balcony is closed.
Bye-bye.